The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stapmiller. We're with you on this Thursday. Oh, it's 9/11. Should I duck? 9/11/17. It is the ninth day of November 2017, I should say. You know, I don't very often do this, but sometimes if you try to improve upon something, you don't really improve on it. And I thought about this. My friend Tom in Pennsylvania sent me this. And it's the SGT report. The guy is interviewing Harley Schlanger. Now, Harley is an interesting individual, ex-special ops CIA kind of guy. But he covers a couple of different subjects, and one of which, of course, is the FBI. Now, a lot of you people out there have been looking at the FBI and going, really? We've watched Mr. Comey, really the Wookiee out of costume, and Mueller. And he goes into Mueller's background and what Mueller used to do. How they kind of tried to control the sheriff out there in Clark County in Las Vegas. this is important information. So what I would like to do, rather than trying to somehow, like some people will do, wheedle their way in and try to take credit or, you know, do a couple excerpts and then do their own cut-and-paste job, I'm just going to allow Harley Schlanger and the SGT report straight up, commercial-free, and I'm going to run the video. Are you potted up there, Mike? I don't very often, like I said, do this, but this is damn good. I couldn't improve upon this. Here we go.
What most Americans still haven't really come to terms with is that the FBI has been a criminal operation for a long time. In fact, Robert Mueller refused to allow Congress to interrogate FBI informants who had been inside terror cells before 9/11.
Hey, friends of SGT Report, thank you so much for tuning in once again. I'm very gratified to have back on the line our good friend Harley Schlanger from LaRouche PAC. And guys, I do want to thank my Patreons so much for your support. You're making a huge difference for us. As again, YouTube is really starting to clamp down, Harley, on real news as it relates to this Vegas shooting. I want to talk just a little bit about that. But first, welcome. How are you, Harley?
I'm good, and I'm not surprised they're going after YouTube because they're going after everything else.
Yeah, they sure are. And I just want to say this. I don't know if you've been following the Vegas shooting, but I think that what happened in Las Vegas is now as big a cover-up and is as dangerous to the deep state in exposing the shadow government as 9/11, because you have multiple witnesses. You can't brainwash everybody, Harley. If you've watched any of these press conferences with Sheriff Lombardo, standing right over his shoulder is the former section chief of counterintelligence at the FBI, Aaron C. Rouse. Almost like Darth Vader is standing over this guy's shoulder, always staring right at him. It is the scariest, weirdest thing. I think this is the biggest display of the deep state that we've ever seen. Because as I said, everybody that endured what happened in Las Vegas is saying and believes there were multiple shooters.
It wasn't that, okay, let's all leave and now it's okay. No, we all started running and they came in. That's why there's no humanly possible way that guy, that was the only shooter.
We have an active shooter inside the whereabouts.
Control, be advised. Shots are coming from gate 7. Gate 7. Shots are coming from gate 7.
We're getting from civilians saying that there might have been 3 shooters.
It sounds like it's confirmed there are at least 2 shooters with fully automatic weapons.
And the FBI says, nope, there was only 1 shooter and he's dead. And people aren't buying it. I think this is just a huge, huge story. And it's not going away.
I think the important thing of what you just reported is the role of the FBI. Because what most Americans still haven't really come to terms with is that the FBI has been a criminal operation for a long time. You go back to Charlottesville, for example, and the FBI was on both sides provoking the violence. The FBI works with people like Soros and the Antifa. The FBI has so-called informants inside Islamic terrorist cells. In fact, Robert Mueller refused to allow Congress to interrogate FBI informants who had been inside terrorist cells before 9/11. So the FBI is a criminal operation, part of the so-called deep state. And this has been the biggest problem we have in breaking away from the old paradigm, is the fact that you still have this police state overseeing everything of importance.
Yeah, it's the corporate government at this point. I've really come to the conclusion that the United States is a corporation run by the shadow government. And yes, there is a constitutional form of government, but that constitutional form of government and the justice system is constantly usurped by the deep state, by the shadow government. And now that is just, it's in the wide open for all to see. And, you know, you mentioned the FBI's role in 9/11. We also have to mention the role of Chertoff, who sent the dancing Israelis back to Israel, who then openly admitted on a talk show,
our purpose was to document the event.
And now in this case, we're hearing rumors that the whole goal of what happened in Las Vegas is to roll out more of those invasive body scanners, as we've seen roll out in the airports post 9/11, into Vegas casinos and then across the country, all in the name of security, all in the name of enriching the same people that were enriched after 9/11. We're just so sick and tired of it in this country, Harley. It just feels like we're a captured people.
You know, this is where we just put out a dossier on who is Robert Mueller, which I think is really important. And if your listeners are interested, they should go to the LaRouchePact.com to get a hold of this. Mueller, and I don't know if I've talked to you about this before, Sean, but Mueller was the chief operative in the Get LaRouche task force in the 1980s. That is, when LaRouche was tasked by Ronald Reagan and his national security advisor, Judge William Clark, to meet with the Russians to discuss sharing the technology for what became the Strategic Defense Initiative, there were people like Henry Kissinger, George Herbert Walker Bush, the Kennedy machine in the Democratic Party, that went crazy and demanded a full investigation of LaRouche. The FBI was approached by British intelligence and told that they have to demonstrate that LaRouche is a Russian agent. And the person who took over that case was the counterintelligence chief of the FBI. He turned it over to William Weld, and Weld's assistant was Robert Mueller. And Mueller handled the prosecution of LaRouche that was thrown out of court in Boston in 1988. The judge declared it a fraud against the court. They brought it to Alexandria, Virginia, and that's where they were able to convict LaRouche. Now, the reason I bring this up is Mueller is not a Johnny-come-lately. He's been in this for years. And look at what they said about LaRouche in the 80s. He's a Russian agent. He's trying to influence Ronald Reagan, of all people, on behalf of the Soviet Union. So this is Mueller's expertise. This plus police state operations. Remember, he became FBI director just after 9/11. He was there with the whole establishment of the metadata collection, the surveillance state, and so on, which he lied about repeatedly. And now what's his job? It's to throw out Trump, or minimally to tie Trump down so that the neocons inside his administration, the Zionist Saudi operatives running around inside his administration, can throw him off course so he can't do what he was elected to do, what he said he was going to do. So I think this is a really important thing to look at Mueller, look at his history, and realize that this is a guy, when we say deep state, we're talking about foreign intelligence. This is the British intelligence operations that had a big impact on Bush Jr. and Obama through Tony Blair and then others inside the regime change wars that were carried out that Trump was elected to stop.
You know, you're right over the target as usual, and you sparked a thought here. I started the call by saying that Aaron C. Rouse was the former section chief of counterintelligence at FBI headquarters. Yeah. A year ago, he was placed in power as the special agent overseeing Las Vegas, for whatever reason. I'm not saying this was planned a year ago, but who knows?
Austin, on Thursday, November 16th. Be a part of the hype.
Oh, boy. Gee, a commercial pops up, and they've had a lot of things over at the SGT, and especially the phaser. Apparently, YouTube is telling them that, nope, you heard a series of videos that he said that they wouldn't play because they're not advertiser-friendly. So now it's YouTube complaining that, well, it doesn't look like we can sell this crap. We can't monetize it, so you can't post it. None of their work, none of their investigation, none of their sweat, none of their toil. At any rate, sorry about that. We got interrupted by an I guess this is unmonetization when they're running ads? Yeah, okay.
For whatever reason. I'm not saying this was planned a year ago, but who knows. I just want to say, though, guys, the section chief of counterintelligence at the FBI, his job is to find spies. His job is to prevent foreign intelligence from circumventing the laws of the United States and spying on us. And in this case of Las Vegas, it now feels like he's protecting the very same people that pulled this off. And I'm going to quote, and I've taken heat for quoting Robert David Steele because people say he's a disinfo agent, he's ex-CIA, but he said right out of the gate a couple days after this thing happened,
Las Vegas is absolutely a false flag event. Whether people died or not, this has been concocted by the Ziocons, by the deep state.
And it's sure feeling that way to me, Harley. So, you know, we don't have to beat the Vegas thing to death because everybody in alt media is covering it. I've been covering it. And it's frankly, it's taken me off task from covering other very important issues. So what do you see happening in the world that maybe we haven't been talking about for a week or two since this Vegas slaughter happened?
Well, let me just mention one other thing about Robert Mueller, because former U.S. Senator Bob Graham of Florida, who's the one whose report on the Saudi role and the Saudi involvement in international terrorism was suppressed by Bush and then Obama. Graham said of Mueller, he wasn't just engaged in a cover-up, but aggressive deception. And when you have the FBI director accused of aggressive deception, and then he's brought in to protect Comey, Brennan, Clapper, and the other lying, immoral criminals from our intelligence community under Obama and before, then you know that this is what you're dealing with, a criminal operation that's out to overturn the wishes of the American people as expressed through an election. Now, I'll just mention a couple things off the top, and we can discuss them, because I know these are things that you're quite concerned about also. Trump is supposed to go to Asia at the beginning of November. Now, one of the bright spots of his administration was his initial opening to Putin, which they did everything to shatter. And secondly, his personal rapport with President Xi Jinping of China, and particularly the possibility that the United States could break out of our continuing funny money depression by joining with China in major infrastructure projects. So as he is preparing for this trip to China and Asia, what do we see going on? Well, the Vegas thing is one thing. You have all this hubbub coming up about Hezbollah and Iran. Where does that come from? That comes from the Israeli and Saudi operations to try to control the administration and control U.S. policy, not just in the Mideast, but internationally. Now, the other thing I want to say about that, which many people are probably missing because it's never covered, is that there actually has been a dramatic change in the on-the-ground political strategic relations in the Middle East because of the Russian intervention into Syria. I'm sure you saw King Salman's trip to meet with Putin. And there, that has so many implications in terms of oil relations, in terms of the prospects of moving away from a dollar system into some kind of yuan, gold, basket of currencies that would be based on these new arrangements. But also, Putin said he's trying to mediate between the Saudis and the Iranians. What could scare people like Netanyahu more, and the Netanyahu flunkies who surround Trump, more than the prospect that the Russians could bring together the Saudis and the Iranians? Now, I have no real trust in the Saudis, but if that could be done, we could see not only an end to terrorism in the Middle East, but an end to the geopolitical games that have held the world captive to this petrodollar central bank fraud that's gone on for the going back to 1971.
Yeah, and the world would like to see that petrodollar fraud come to an end, because it would mean the end of these imperialist wars of hegemony, right? This overreach of the military.
Exactly.
It's not our military anymore, though, and I want to make that clear, because I sound very anti-government, but I'm anti-shadow government. I'm pro-constitution, and our military has been usurped and captured by this neocon entity that continues to thrust us into wars the American people want nothing to do with, Harley. And that's what 9/11 was all about, right?
No, you're absolutely right. And I think it's important, because we're seeing now reports not just coming from Russia, but from other countries, that the U.S., and by U.S., they're somewhat vague, but the U.S. is continuing to provide weapons to Syrian so-called rebels, including terrorists. Now, I agree with you. This is probably not being done by Trump. But you have so many different operations that have been set afoot by the privatization of the military, privatization of intelligence, that that's what we're seeing. Blackstone, or I can't remember, BlackRock, I guess, these kinds of private mercenary armies that have huge amounts of money, a lot of it drug money that's been laundered, money to move arms, to move soldiers. And this is a continuation of the terrorist fight that's going on in the Middle East. Now, the Russians did a pretty good job, and from all the reports I have, there was real coordination going on between the U.S. military and the Russians out of Amman, Jordan. But that's threatened now by these new reports that show U.S. weapons being offloaded into the hands of ISIS and al-Qaeda forces in Syria and Iraq.
You know, let me jump in and say something. It may be a bit of a right turn, but I think it helps us understand how if Trump, because didn't Trump just recently order the CIA out of Syria? Didn't he just order the end of arming the rebels? But now you say it may be happening anyway, and I just want to share this with folks. Last night I watched Stephen Greer's new documentary called Unacknowledged. You can watch it on Netflix. It's very, very good. I really enjoyed it. And in that documentary about UFOs and hidden technology and breakaway civilizations and the deep state and the skunk works and all the stuff that goes on that's black book, black projects. It's in that movie, and it makes a lot of sense, because there's been president after president, there's been CIA directors even who have asked for documentation of things. You know, this Harley, this phone of mine, do you believe this? This iPhone, as we're having this conversation. Guys, I'm not even going to edit this out. We're having a conversation right now, and I have this stupid iPhone sitting here next to me, and it's now on its own. Let me read this to you. This is my iPhone saying, here's what I found on the web, for it's very, very good. I really enjoyed it in that documentary about UFOs and hidden technology and breakaway civilizations. My phone is recording me. See, this is the problem, Harley. This is the problem. We are all under surveillance, whether we like it or not. Every word we say is being recorded. But the point I was trying to make is that in that documentary, it becomes very, very clear that there is amazing technology that a breakaway deep state form, a skunk works, secret shadow government, has incredible technology that it's using that it's not releasing to the people. And I just want to share this. It was in the documentary about Ben Rich, the former head of Lockheed Skunk Works, who said, whatever you can imagine, we can already do. We have the technology to take E.T. home. What I just realized the other day from a reader who sent this to me is that the president and chief executive officer of the RAND Corporation is Michael Rich, Ben Rich's son. So the point I'm trying to make here is the deep state is a familial thing. The Bush family, the Dulles brothers, the Riches, all of this stuff, this shadow government, this deep state, is familial. It's families. It's power unseen behind the scenes. And I know that was a long way to get back to Syria, but if they're arming the Syrian rebels, there's not a damn thing Trump can do to stop it, because the deep state, the shadow government, they do what they want, and they're above the law. The CIA is above the law. That's the problem.
And that's why the fight, for national sovereignty and economic sovereignty is so important, because everything you've just reported is underwritten by the central banks and their creation of funny money, their elimination of all regulation, and the opening of dirty money, whether it's money that comes from gun trading, drug trading, prostitution, or how much of the quantitative easing money may have ended up in the hands of these mercenary forces. So we're dealing with a criminal operation that is diametrically opposed to the idea of functioning nation states. That's why, look, anything else you might want to say about Saddam Hussein, he was trying to keep his nation together. Gaddafi was trying to keep his nation together. So was Assad. So was Putin. So was Xi Jinping. Who are the countries that the United States and the deep state support? Countries that are willing to sign away their sovereignty. What we're seeing in Europe now, Sean, and this is very interesting, is the continuing dynamic of rebellion against the establishment elites. The vote in Germany, the AfD is still, we still don't really know exactly who they are and what they're going to do, but the people who voted for them voted against the existing parties. Merkel's party had its lowest vote total since 1949, and the Social Democrats, who have been in coalition with Merkel, had their lowest vote total since the 1880s. You know what that means? That means people in Germany don't like their government one bit. The Macron election, now Macron is a phony, but he got elected by people who voted against all the establishment parties. That's what put Trump in the White House. Now, we know, therefore, that as you were just saying, people don't like this. We don't like permanent wars. We don't like being told we're not rich because we're stupid or lazy or ignorant. You know, they just gave the Nobel Prize for Economics to this fraud, Richard Thaler, whose theory is that people are inherently irrational and make bad choices, and you need some force outside of them to nudge them in the right direction. You know, whether it's the nanny state or a top-down authoritarian Orwellian dictatorship, that's how the elite think. And people don't like it, but they still haven't broken from it. And we're watching as the president is being pulled in many different directions. I don't think he really knows what he's up against yet. People who've tried to tell him have been forced out. They have cut him off from some of the people who were important during his campaign. And I think it's now up to the American people to not just express our contempt for these elites, but to demand that the United States join with those forces in the world that are opposing this deep state. And that's what the Chinese Silk Road is. You know, people could say all they want about one-party government in China and dictatorship. And what are we talking about in the United States? The Chinese are at least investing in something that adds value to the economy and helps the people of their country. Whereas in this country, it's the other way around. The people are being destroyed and lied to, and the flow of funds ends up in the hands of the same 1% at the top, who control this apparatus.
Yeah, and we'll come full circle here at the end of the call. I want to read just a few passages from an article, but before we do that, I wanted to ask you about North Korea. Now, you probably saw that clip of Trump the other day saying, "This is the calm before the storm." And everybody wondered what that meant. I immediately thought he was probably talking about North Korea because he's been such a rabble-rouser as it relates to North Korea. I mean, really, off the hinge.
Yeah.
He's off the hinge as far as I'm concerned, because North Korea has not been a real problem for the United States for decades. What are we really talking about here? And why is he doing this? Is he being forced to do this? Because I think there's much, much bigger problems on planet Earth than North Korea being an immediate threat to the United States, Harley. There's something bigger at play here.
Well, with the risk of sounding somewhat off the wall myself, I would say that Kim Jong-un has shown a certain amount of rationality by maintaining a nuclear program, because every nation that we've targeted that was developing nuclear weapons, when they gave them up, we went in and invaded and killed the leader and carried out a regime change and wrecked the country. Now, North Korea is a not very good place, but you're not going to change them by threatening them. And this is where we saw the schizophrenia, let's say, of the Trump administration when he spoke at the United Nations, where the first part of his speech was beautiful. It was about how we don't tell other people what to do. We don't believe in regime change. We have our system. We have our constitution. And we're willing to work with any other people as long as they respect our constitution, and we'll work with them. And then he laid out the case for regime change in five or six nations. So I don't know if he can see that that's schizophrenic, but I think that there's someone in there, probably a group of people, maybe around McMaster, maybe Jared Kushner has that much pull, but I doubt it. He seems like quite a lightweight, just someone who's being used by others. But there's a grouping in there, probably Mnuchin is a part of it, the Goldman Sachs guy, Gary Cohn, who are pushing Trump, pushing his buttons to get him to sound off on North Korea, sound off on Iran right now, while at the same time there's some things he's doing that are quite interesting and good. Let me just mention one of them, not to defend Trump, but to give people a sense that there's a schizophrenia involved here. When he was in Puerto Rico and he said, we're going to have to write off Puerto Rico's debt, he was right on two counts. One, they'll never be able to pay it back. But two, he wasn't just talking about Puerto Rico. You know, it's not Puerto Rico's $72 billion debt that threatens the world financial system. It's the tens of trillions of dollars of non-financial debt, of the debt of students, of car loans, of housing loans that can't be repaid, of bond markets. And then the hundreds of trillions of derivative obligations that banks are carrying on their books. When Trump said that debt may not be paid, we can't pay it, this scared the hell out of the deep state. And now we see the whole Iran situation blowing up. The question of, is Hezbollah planning terrorism in the United States? So I think I would characterize it as an administration that has schizophrenic tendencies that are being pushed and manipulated from both the outside and within.
Well, can you imagine?
That's why.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was saying that's why we had Russiagate. Because do they really think, does the CIA really think that Vladimir Putin spent $60,000 on Facebook ads and that won the election for Trump?
No.
That Trump was colluding with the Russians? Of course not.
No.
What they're upset about is the breakaway from the deep state and the geopolitical doctrine that's dominated the world since at least 1971. And that's what's causing Trump to be schizophrenic.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine being in his shoes? It'd be a little bit like Sheriff Lombardo, if we can assume he is an honest sheriff, who finds himself in Las Vegas in this situation where none of the evidence is adding up to support the official story. And he's got to go and do press conferences with Aaron C. Rouse breathing down his back, literally staring at him as if to say, stay on script or you're a dead man. I mean, literally, if you look at Aaron C. Rouse staring at this sheriff as he tries to report on the latest changing timeline, which is a huge, huge problem that the timeline keeps changing. And right. Then there's another agent behind Aaron C. Rouse who says when a reporter asks about the shooter's car, the other agent whispers, don't go there. Twice, don't go there.
I'm sorry? Don't ask me to make assumptions.
I mean, literally, they are interfering with justice. It's a parallel to what Trump must be feeling in the White House, surrounded by snakes, surrounded by deep state at the Pentagon, at the CIA. It has to be very, very unsettling, and it would make even the most normal of us feel schizophrenic.
Well, and in the financial community as well, where every time Trump says something about going back towards Glass-Steagall, or when he talks about working with the Chinese, there are 25 articles that come up saying that this is for his own hotel business, or that he's a corrupt guy, or he can't think an idea through. So we're dealing with, in a sense, I brought up Orwell earlier. I've just been doing some research on George Orwell, and you have this idea of an Orwellian state where you rewrite the past to control the future. And this is what we're seeing happening. What do you think Mueller's investigating? There's nothing defined on Russia. So as Senators Burr and Warner admitted the other day, they said, we've interrogated hundreds of people, gone through thousands of pages of documents, and so far we've found nothing to indicate Russian meddling. However, our intelligence community said it happened, so we've got to keep looking. Well, no, they don't. They should call the intelligence community people in there and start going through how often they've lied to the American people, lied to the Congress. The problem is the Congress is largely bought by the same networks. Now, what really frightens them is what we saw in Alabama. And I'm not saying that Roy Moore is the solution, but Luther Strange was not the solution. He was a McConnell guy, and he was voted out. Now Corker's stepping down. You have a whole bunch of these people who are beginning to realize that the American people don't like them, don't trust them, won't go along with them anymore. And we've got to take that raw potential and educate it. You know, programs like yours and a handful of other blogs that actually get into real economic thinking. We've got to go out and get a core group in the United States to understand what real physical economy is. And if you take the power away from the people who print the money, take the power away from the Federal Reserve, from the Bank of England, from the European Central Bank, and put it into the hands of government that's controlled by people, not corporations, then the deep state will be starved and strangled. For those people who think the deep state is permanent and will never be defeated, you haven't been paying attention. They're extremely weak, but their strength is that the American people don't believe they can be defeated.
Well, I hope you're right, Harley. I really, truly do. And one of the ways that I would see that you may be right about the deep state being weak is that, again, it's like the wizard in The Wizard of Oz has all the power until you pull that curtain back and you realize who he really is. And the deep state does not like being exposed. And I think Vegas is exposing them, just like 9/11 exposed them. And now we'll come full circle, because I do want your thoughts on this, from Russia Insider. And the title of their article was, China and Russia have a plan to dethrone the dollar. If they succeed, most of the world will rejoice. And we sort of talked about this earlier in the call, Harley, about the end of U.S. hegemony. But let me just read this four paragraphs to you. It's the highlights of the article, and I would really like your thoughts on it and what it means for us as Americans in our future. In recent years, it has become clear to many nations opposing Washington that the only way to adequately contain the fallout from the collapsing U.S. empire is to progressively abandon the dollar. This serves to limit Washington's capacity for military spending by creating the necessary alternative tools in the financial and economic realms that will eliminate Washington's dominance. This is essential in the Russo-Sino-Iranian strategy to unite Eurasia and thereby render the U.S. irrelevant. De-dollarization for Beijing, Moscow, and Tehran has become a strategic priority. Eliminating the unlimited spending capacity of the Fed and the American economy means limiting U.S. imperialist expansion and diminishing global destabilization. That last sentence, Harley, is so powerful. Diminishing global destabilization. Guys, you may not know it living in this country, but the rest of the world is blaming us for what's happening globally in terms of destabilization. Harley, your thoughts on any of that?
I think I agree with most of those thoughts. Look, I'm here in Europe, and I'm watching the Europeans trying to decide if they're going to stick with the what from here is a London, Wall Street, Washington consensus. And you know what you have is a rebellion against that in the West. But as you point out, in Eurasia, they're already building new structures. Now imagine, you talked about Russia, China, and Iran, or the article did. Imagine including India with that, Egypt, and possibly Saudi Arabia. We're talking about what's left in the West is a broken down economic system, a broken down physical economy. You look at the United States now from the outside and you realize the infrastructure problems in the United States are far worse than they've been at any time in the last century. We don't have railroads that work. We don't have airports that function. We can't protect our cities from flooding. Whereas the rest of the world is moving in a different direction, investing in physical infrastructure, in physical economy, in developing new technologies, educating the youth instead of drugging them and sticking them on their cell phones to be entertained 24 hours a day. The world is shifting. There's what Mrs. LaRouche calls a new economic paradigm coming into existence. Now, we could join that. The United States could be a part of it. And if you put together a U.S.-Russia-China alliance, then that would change everything. But that means we have to take our country, the United States, back from this gang of criminals and swindlers. And that's a hard fight. But I agree with what you were saying on two points. If people know who they're fighting and know that there are others fighting, then we will be strengthened. And if they know there's already an alternative being put together internationally, that can help as well. In a sense, what we've been calling recently the spirit of the new Silk Road, that's got to catch on in America. And I would encourage people to go to our website, LaRouchePact.com. And if people want to be in touch with me on this, I am writing an article every week right now, and I'm happy to send out the latest article if people are interested. You can contact me directly at harleysch@gmail.com. So that's harleysch@gmail.com. But we've got to pool our efforts. And one of the reasons I appreciate you so much, Sean, and I'm always willing to come on and talk with you, is that I know your listeners out there, in spite of sometimes being cynical and demoralized, do want to change. They want to change the world. And I think now we have no choice to do it, but to do it, because if we don't, this deep state will push us into a war, which will probably be a nuclear war with Russia.
Guys, you should check out LaRouchePact.com and try to find that publication, that article they wrote called Who is Robert Mueller? That is on the website, correct?
Yes, it's actually called Robert Mueller is an Amoral Legal Assassin.
An even better title. I love you guys over there at LaRouche. You don't mince words, and you are laying out a roadmap for America and for Trump. If he could shake off the deep state, you know, there is a way out of this. There is a way out of this. There's a way to it.
He should listen to the SGT report.
No, he should listen to you guys and read, you know, he should probably meet with LaRouche. And I do find it fascinating that Robert Mueller was behind the strategy to put LaRouche in prison. How many other good men have gone to prison that didn't belong there? You know, Peter Schiff's dad, same story, and then he died in prison. I'll tell you, at this point in human history, at least in American history, it's pretty clear that these for-profit prisons, Harley, they're not meant for people like Hillary Clinton. They're meant for the enemies of people like Hillary Clinton.
Exactly.
All right. Yep. All right, guys. Harley, thank you.
All right. You can understand why I didn't want to add anything to this. I'm going to contact Harley Schlanger, and, I'll get him on the program. But as you can see, this was a perfect interview. The right questions were asked, and it went a long ways in explaining deep state and why nothing's getting done. That we have people within his own cabinet. I don't know what you can do about a son-in-law. Like Mr. Kirshner, that is buddy-buddy and real tight with Israel. There is an alignment going on right now that is, this is, to me, a little bit more than scary. You know, I keep referring to Saudi Arabia as being the sock puppet for Israel. Well, there may be grander plans for that. And I want to get into that, but suffice to say, you can understand why I didn't want to chop that interview up. And I wanted you people to understand what he was saying and allow the flow of that conversation rather than being interrupted by a commercial or my voice. Wayne Madsen, Strategic Culture. Wayne was on this network, for a couple of years ago. Several years ago. He was on the network for a couple of years. And he's been delving into the Israeli-Saudi Arabia This thing's getting ready to go hot in the Middle East, and it's not good. He said the recent leak of classified Israel foreign minister cable sent to all Israeli diplomatic facilities worldwide points to the subterfuge being engaged in by Israel and Saudi Arabia to effectuate political discord in Lebanon and Saudi military confrontation with Iran. The recent leak of classified Israeli foreign minister cable sent to all Israeli diplomatic facilities worldwide points to the subterfuge being engaged in by Israel and Saudi Arabia to effectuate the political discord in Lebanon and the Saudi military confrontation with Iran. The cable instructs Israeli diplomats to ratchet up diplomatic pressure against Lebanese Hezbollah and Iran. The Israel plan saw an opportunity, in fact, that the new regime in Saudi Arabia, headed by Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, was able to force Lebanese Prime Minister Saad Hariri, a longtime puppet of the Saudis, to resign his post from Saudi soil. The Israeli cable also urged its missions abroad to pressure foreign governments to support Saudi Arabia's war against the Houthis in Yemen. Iran is a major backer of the Houthis, who adhere to the Zaydi sect of Islam, which has strong religious ties to the Shias who govern Iran and lead Hezbollah, as well as the Alawite sect of Islam that dominates the government of Syria. The Israeli cable, in its English translation from Hebrew, states to Israeli diplomats, "You need to stress that the Hariri resignation shows how dangerous Iran and Hezbollah are for Lebanon's security." Although many Middle East political observers believe the alleged Houthi intermediate range missile attack, alleged attack on King Khalid International Airport, was more fiction than it was fact. The Israelis, no strangers to false flag military and intelligence operations, ordered its diplomats to demonstrate to their host government that the missile launched by the Houthis toward Riyadh calls for applying more pressure on Iran and Hezbollah. The leak of the Israeli cable followed two events in Saudi Arabia. The first was the de facto internal coup launched by MBS, which, let me pop back up here. And when I mention MBS, rather than repeating his name, yeah, Mike, don't look at me. I'm still here. that would be Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, okay, or MBS. MBS against perceived enemies of his father, King Salman. Now, the coup followed by a few days the second major event, a secretive trip made by President Donald Trump's senior advisor and son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to Riyadh. Kushner and MBS remained awake for many evenings until 4 a.m. the next morning, jointly planning strategy. Kushner was accompanied by to Riyadh by the Cairo-born U.S. Deputy National Security Advisor, Dina Powell, a supporter of government of the pro-Saudi Egyptian President, Abdel Fattah el-Sisi, and the White House Middle East envoy, Jason Greenblatt. A strong supporter of Israel, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, and a close friend of the Kushner family. As seen from the leaked Israeli cable, Kushner, Greenblatt, Powell, and MBS were strategizing a series of events that would push the Middle East toward a major Sunni Wahhabist war. With the backing of Israel against Iran, Lebanon, and the Houthi government in Yemen, MBS's coup against senior princes of the House of Saud effectively changed the regime itself from Saudi to Salmani. MBS was the prime motivator behind the creation of the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL, if you will, or Daesh, in Iraq and Syria, the chief architect of the genocidal Saudi-led war in Yemen, and the driving force behind the Gulf Cooperation Council's economic and travel sanctions imposed on Qatar. MBS, working with Kushner and the Israelis, also want to lure the United States into a major conflict with Iran. Now, rather than being a reformer or moderate, MBS harkens back to the age when rival sheiks and the tribal leaders themselves vied for control over wide patches of the desert lands in Arabia. Now, MBS's ongoing coup d'etat against rival princes of the House of Saud points to his determination to become an autocratic ruler over Saudi Arabia once his father, King Salman, leaves the scene. Now, although MBS has curbed the power of Saudi Arabia's dreaded religious police and allowed women the right to drive to gain popular support for his own Salmani movement in Saudi Arabia, his Salmani regime has shown an inclination to brook no political dissent, as seen with MBS's arrest of powerful Saudi princes, businessmen, and moderate Wahhabist clerics. Well, let me stop and digress here for a second. You've heard in the news, it's about $30 billion that, they're confiscating. No. It's $0.8 trillion, over $800 billion that they want to bring back in. Now, and you can start a damn good war for that kind of cash. Now, some Middle East experts see MBS's rapid rise to power as eventually achieving the same autocratic rule over Saudi Arabia as that commanded by the founder of the modern Saudi state, Abdulaziz bin Saud, in the 1930s. And like Abdulaziz bin Saud, MBS has no problem cooperating with Zionists to achieve his goals. Now, historical documents and biographies show that Abdulaziz, or Ibn Saud, as he was commonly known, had no problem in expressing support in 1953 to Dr. Chaim Weizmann, the president of the World Zionist Organization, and later the first president of the State of Israel, for the establishment of a Jewish state in Palestine. In a memo written for President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Lieutenant Colonel Harold B. Hoskins, the president's Middle East envoy, reported that Ibn Saud accepted the Zionist plan for the Jewish state in return for $20 million bribe paid to Ibn Saud by Weizmann. The recent deal between the Saudis and the Israelis would appear to involve a bribe of U.S. war with Iran, backed by Riyadh and Jerusalem, and that would mutually satisfy Trump and Kushner in addition to Netanyahu and NBS. Well, Trump, keep an eye on that one. MBS's rise to a prominent role within the House of Saud began in earnest in October of 2011, when Crown Prince Sultan bin Abdulaziz died. The present king, Salman, who had been governor of Riyadh province, became second deputy prime minister and defense minister in November of 2011. Now, Salman made MBS his personal advisor, and armed with that wide portfolio, the young prince helped initiate the jihadist rebellion in Syria against President Bashar al-Assad and the uprising against Muammar Gaddafi in Libya. MBS also aided his father in helping to brutally crush a pro-democracy uprising in Bahrain. In November 2012, Nayef bin Abdulaziz al-Saud, that's Salman's brother, died. Salman was named Crown Prince and first deputy prime minister. Salman basically ran Saudi Arabia's domestic affairs while his half-brother, King Abdullah, was out of the country, which was often. Crown Prince Salman's penchant for charitable contributions to poor majority Muslim countries, which was shared by MBS, saw Saudi funds flow into the coffers of the Wahhabist radical groups in Somalia, Bangladesh, Afghanistan, and the Sudan. In January 2015, King Abdullah died at the age of 90 and Salman succeeded to the Saudi throne, the former chief of Saudi intelligence agency. Prince Maguin bin Abdulaziz al-Saud was named crown prince by Salman. Now, Mergren's reign did not last long. In April 2015, Salman replaced Mergren with his nephew, the interior minister Prince Mohammed bin Nayef al-Assad. MBS was named defense minister, and on June 21, 2017, in what can be described as the beginning of a creeping coup, Crown Prince Nayef was deposed by a royal decree in which he would portend future events a mere 4 months later. Nayef was reportedly held under house arrest at his palace and pressured to renounce his claim to the throne. King Salman moved quickly to name MBS the new crown prince. In September of 2017, MBS detained some of the top clerics in Saudi Arabia, including Salman al-Ouda, that's spelled O-U-D-A, who, as being independent from Saudi state Wahhabist and their infrastructure, was known to favor reconciliation between Saudi Arabia and Qatar. Al-Uda's two compatriots, Awad al-Kuwani and Ali al-Omari, were also arrested. I'm not going to repeat those two again. Now, former Crown Prince Nayef is said to have had remained under house arrest until MBS made his sudden move against other members of the House of Saud. This is a coup going on, folks. On November 4th of this year, declaring the foundation of a new Saudi anti-corruption committee, MBS placed under house arrest at least 12 Saudi princes, including multi-billionaire international investor and Kingdom Holding Company chairman Prince Alawid bin Talal al-Saud. MBS also fired and arrested the commander of the Saudi National Guard, the son of the late King Abdullah, Prince Matib bin Abdullah, and replaced him with MBS loyalist Prince Khalid bin... I'm not even going to try that, at any rate. Many senior officials of the late King Abdullah's government are being systematically purged by MBS and his loyalists, or people that are loyal to him. They include Prince Turki bin Abdullah, a former governor of Riyadh province, Khalid al-Tuwari, I think that is pronounced, the chief royal court under Abdullah. At the same time, MBS was rounding up princes and ministers in Riyadh. A helicopter carrying Prince Mansour bin Mergren, the deputy governor of Assur province, and seven other senior Saudi officials crashed near Abha in Asir province near the border with Houthi-controlled North Yemen. Now, Prince Mansour and his son, former Crown Prince, Prince Mergren bin Abdulaziz, who was ousted in 2015 in favor of Salman. On November 6th, the Saudi Prince Palace expressed its confidence and condolences. Let me back up here. Expressed in its condolences on the death of 44-year-old Prince Abdulaziz. Now, reports out of Saudi Arabia itself stated that Prince died as a result of gunshot wounds after his security guards exchanged fire with police loyal to NBS, who were sent to arrest him. Trump, on his Asia trip, tweeted his total support for the NBS coup. With the subterfuge of NBS, Kushner, and the Israelis, Trump is waltzing the United States into a potentially disastrous confrontation with Iran and a total breakdown of the tenuous political status quo in the Middle East. Folks, going back to what I was saying about the grand strategy for Greater Israel, we have seen their wish map taking half of Iraq, probably, if they can, Syria. But this is an expansionist project in which they're going to use the United States under the guise of fighting terror. And we already know how well we've been fighting that terrorist, the terrorist, in the Middle East. And our grand plan was to, unseat Bashar al-Assad. Because why? He was an evil guy. He's one of the most level-headed leaders in the Middle East, all countries combined. Where Christians, where Jews, where Arabs, and a number of other groups live in peace in Syria. They're not fighting each other. They're not trying to gain control. They're not trying to wipe each other out and take over the damn government. But here we were, in probably the most peaceful nation inside the Middle East. What we decided to do is to stabilize it, destabilize it, and take out Assad. For what reason? Well, I think it's becoming clear now that instead of Israel, which has made forays into Syria, they've been trying to worm their way in to protect certain assets in Syria, and Bashar al-Assad is not having it. And more importantly, neither are the Russians. If the Russians were not there, you could have kissed Syria goodbye a long time ago and have the same damn thing that's going on in Iraq and other countries in the Middle East over and over, nothing but a gristmill grinding people up until they get what they want. Tell you what, folks, I think this whole North Korea thing, what we're starting to hear through back channels, looks like the leader of North Korea isn't that crazy. And that there is going to be a time in the near future that there's going to be a little bit of dialogue and conversation. Remember what I've said about the North Koreans. Every man, woman, child in that country, from the time that they can speak Korean or understand their parents, they're all being told that the United States wants to destroy us and occupy us, just like they've been doing in Germany since the end of World War II. And the one thing, if you want to stop something, the one thing that you do not do is rattle the sabers so hard that nobody can hear anything except war, war, war. There's even stories that have been floated out there that the United States is going to head up and spearhead an operation with the South Koreans to invade North Korea militarily, boots on the ground. Now, all the while, look what's cooking in the background. Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, his connection, Mr. Kushner, cushy, 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 in the White House for the grander plans of the Middle East. As I was always reminded people, folks, when you start to smell smoke and you think you see a little bit of fire, okay, keep your head on a swivel and check 10, 15 degrees up on the horizon all the way around you to see what's coming at you. This whole North Korean thing, in my estimation, my opinion, has been nothing but a smokescreen for the goings-on in the Middle East. Trillions of dollars have been spent, millions of lives. Millions of people are dead. And you think that this has, well, we're just fighting terrorism. We're not here to redesign or re-empower who we think should be running the Middle East. And while Israel, sitting in the background, is plotting out on its new map where its boundaries are going to be for greater Israel. You see where this is going. Jeff Bennett coming up, second hour of the National Intel Report. He's got a lot of good information coming at you. Folks, it ain't going to take much. Remember what happened with the stock market in October of 1929, that Black Tuesday? Hit an all-time record, and all of a sudden, it was record chaos. Back with you tomorrow with another edition of the National Intel Report. I thank you for being here today.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigraLeaf. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigraLeaf migraine formula. MigraLeaf is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigraLeaf for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.